Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso. High-speed internet connection has become essential for everything from accessing healthcare remotely to online education and emergency alerts. But a new county survey finds that a shocking number of residents in our region's unincorporated areas have no internet access at all at home. We'll have details on what the county plans to do to improve online access on today's show. If you had damage from the recent storms across our region, the county wants to hear from you as it works to determine whether federal or state emergency funding can be requested. California ranks fourth in the nation for green buildings. Learn more on our show today. Then on Crime Beat, San Diego police have released the identity of a pharmacist shot and killed by officers in Crest after he allegedly stabbed a coworker to death at a pharmacy near Alvarado Hospital. Names of the officers involved in that shooting have also been made public. Next up, we'll have a warning on how scammers are targeting people who use EBT cards to buy food and how you can protect yourself from being ripped off. On Destination East County, we'll have top events coming up across our inland region, including concerts, hikes, wildlife viewing opportunities, a play, stargazing, and more. From California News Service, a new education poll asked parents about their priorities for kids in schools, and the answers may surprise you. We'll also have news about one lucky pup rescued from a well filled with oil in Ramona. Our newsmaker interview today is with Kathy Torres. She's a survivor of human trafficking, and she's here to talk about the alarming rise in sex trafficking of teenagers across San Diego County. It's happening in every single school district, folks. Be sure to stay tuned to learn how parents, teachers, and others in our community can protect young people from falling prey to sex traffickers, and what the warning signs are that a minor may be being groomed by a trafficker or is already being trafficked. Our guest today is also involved in helping survivors of sex trafficking. Plus, we'll have details on who to call if you or someone you know may be in need of help to escape traffickers. And finally, on Green Scene, on a more positive note, hear about the San Diego River Park Foundation's successful acquisition of Lillian Hill, property near Three Sisters Falls between Julian and Descanso, which will now be preserved for posterity. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine radio show, where East County matters. A recent analysis of census data as part of San Diego County's comprehensive broadband plan shows that approximately 37 households in the unincorporated area of our county don't have a broadband internet subscription. This puts them at a disadvantage when it comes to things like online education, healthcare services, or emergency notifications. Reliable and affordable internet access is a basic need in today's connected world. Just ask Warner Springs resident and emergency volunteer Melissa Crow, who recently signed up for Starlink Internet after years of suffering with less than stellar service. She says having a reliable way to communicate can very literally be a matter of life or death for us in the rural communities. Whether it is the need to check on our elderly, call 911 in an emergency, or for educational purposes, being connected is an important aspect of modern life. She says, adding, "All of my neighbors in the rural communities should be able to procure reliable internet for themselves and their families." The county's report is the county's latest effort to address inadequate broadband infrastructure and access in communities. The Comprehensive Broadband Plan supports the county's efforts to close that digital divide in the unincorporated area by identifying problems, as well as the partnerships, infrastructure, and education needed to change that. Here are more shocking findings from the county's survey. 92% of surveyed residents in the unincorporated area did not have an internet subscription at home due to availability, reliability, or affordability. 58% of these residents say internet access is not available in their area. 19% say internet access is too expensive, and 15% say internet speeds are too slow. Areas in need of infrastructure tend to be located in rural, desert, and mountain areas in North and East County, such as Valley Center and the Mountain Empire. These internet deserts are typically more rural, more mountainous, and have lower incomes than their suburban peers. Residents within these communities often pay higher prices for lower speed internet access than in the urban areas. Communities with low access in the region often have populations with non-English speakers, lower education levels, and higher poverty than the countywide average. Now, the county has taken some actions already to improve internet access, and more are planned. Thanks to a $4.3 million federal grant, the county library created the Tech Connect program. It puts laptops and Wi-Fi hotspots in the hands of 7,000 library users who lack access to the internet and a computer. Library cardholders can check out a laptop and an air card for 1 year free of charge. The county has partnered with SANDAG on its Get Connected campaign to advance affordable internet service and digital literacy programs. Through a partnership with Caltrans, the county has also identified opportunities to leverage already planned roadway projects and deploy fiber, as well as expand high-speed broadband service to underserved communities at the same time. So, what's next? The plan identifies areas with connectivity gaps and prioritizes them by greatest need, including lack of access and affordable options. The county will be using this plan to identify the type of infrastructure projects needed to increase connectivity in those areas, such as installing more fiber optic cables. The plan will also help the county determine how it can best collaborate with others to build regional partnerships, engaging the public and private entities to work together to expand broadband access to all county residents. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is Jonathan Getz with the public service announcement from the County of San Diego. The County Office of Emergency Services is asking for your help to estimate the flooding and rain damage in our region caused by the recent series of storms. People whose property or small businesses were damaged by storms between December 29, 2022 and January 17, 2023 can complete a damage survey form. You can find a link to the form at sdcountyrecovery.com. The data collected will be used to estimate the total damages countywide and determine if enough damage occurred to qualify the region for disaster assistance, such as low-interest disaster loans from the Small Business Administration for those who are uninsured or underinsured. Completing the form does not guarantee the region or the property owner will be eligible to receive disaster assistance. For additional information, visit sdrecovery.com. If your property was damaged by the storm and you need immediate assistance, other local services may be available through 211sandiego.org.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
California is ranked fourth in the nation for green buildings for 2022 and has made the top 10 states for the 10th year in a row. The U.S. Green Building Council tracks the square footage in green buildings per capita according to the LEED standard, which stands for Leadership in Energy and Environmental Design. Stephanie Gabriel is Pacific Regional Director for the U.S. Green Building Council. She says California has long been in the forefront of the fight against climate change.
California as a state, they continue to lead in sustainability policy and practices at a state and local level.
Last year in California, 386 projects were LEED certified, totaling more than 96 million square feet, which is more than double the closest state. But on a per capita basis, the Golden State ranks behind Massachusetts, Illinois, and New York. Although D.C. is not a state, it has the best record of all due to a large number of federal green projects. Rhiannon Jacobson, also with the Green Building Council, says LEED-certified buildings generally use 30% less energy and have a lighter environmental footprint.
It is going to be covering everything from the air quality of the building itself, the amount of energy and water that it's using, and the amount of waste it's creating.
Sustainability in the building industry is key to California's goal of reducing greenhouse gas emissions to 40% below 1990 levels in the next 7 years. According to the Alliance to Save Energy, buildings use about 40% of the nation's energy and are responsible for the same proportion of the country's greenhouse gas emissions. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
This is East County Magazine's Crime Beat. On the streets, reporting on crimes impacting communities across our region, helping to keep you safe and informed.
This is Jonathan Getz with the Crime Beat Report. A man suspected of fatally stabbing a woman at the Alvarado Medical Center Pharmacy on January 17th was later shot and killed by San Diego police at his home in Crest. The woman, 66-year-old Mary Ellen Carter of Lakeside, was found by San Diego Police Department officers with multiple stab wounds. She was not breathing and, despite life-saving efforts, died at a local hospital. SDPD officers say that the victim and suspect both worked at the pharmacy. Officers found the 77-year-old suspect, pharmacist Frank Brower, at his home on La Crest Boulevard in Crest. After an altercation between officers and the suspect, beanbags were deployed but proved ineffective, the San Diego Sheriff's Department told 10 News. According to sheriff's officials, the suspect then reached for what appeared to be a shotgun from inside his vehicle. Two San Diego police officers shot the suspect, who, despite life-saving efforts, died at the scene. The officers involved in the shooting were Officer Salvador Laurel Torres and Officer Robert Rayner. Both have worked for SDPD for 7 years and were put on administrative leave.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the mountains to the sea.
Thieves are targeting electronic benefit transfer, or EBT cards, locally and throughout the state. EBT cards provide monthly funds from the USDA's Food and Nutrition Services for people to buy food. Here are some easy steps EBT card users should take to protect their benefits. The most common ways benefits are stolen are through skimming and scamming. To help prevent those from happening, never share personal information like your social security number, bank information, EBT card, or PIN number with strangers or organizations you are not familiar with. The state of California and the county of San Diego will never call or text asking for your card or PIN number. You can protect your PIN number by keeping it a secret, not writing it down, assuring others do not see you in put your PIN, and changing your PIN number often. You can also sign up for direct deposit if you are part of the CalWORKS program, so benefits go directly to your bank account instead of a card. Many banks offer free accounts if you sign up for direct deposit. You can enroll or stop direct deposit at any time. Each month, you will be able to access your benefits on time through your bank account. This protects your benefits and prevents fraud. While San Diego County is able to replace stolen benefits in most cases, this process typically takes a few days and does not guarantee you will get your money back. The state is working to upgrade EBT security technology. Until that happens, and even after, the county recommends that everyone takes these steps to protect their benefits. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Getz.
Welcome to East County Magazine's Destination East County, bringing you all of the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County each week.
This is Miriam Raftery.
And Jonathan Getz with Destination East County.
Featuring the top festivals and events coming up across San Diego's East County.
Prince Again, a tribute to Prince, will be playing January 27th at the Magnolia, formerly known as the East County Performing Arts Center. For more information, you can visit magnoliasandiego.com.
Also on Friday, January 27th, the Family Stone, Jerry Martini, and Foon Stone, daughter of Sly and Cynthia Stone, will be at the Oak Ballroom in Viejas. As Sly performed Everyday People, danced to the music, and higher on the Ed Sullivan Show, you can find the Family Stone concert under the Viejas.com events tab.
Lamplighters Theater in La Mesa presents The Revlon Girl, evoking a 1966 disaster in Aberfan, England, where mining waste slid downhill onto a school, killing many people. The play depicts four women who lost their children and the volunteers who helped them to heal. The Revlon Girl is playing now through February 5th. For tickets, visit lamplighterslamesa.com.
Mission Trails Regional Park invites you to a star party held on the first Friday each month. You can join members of the San Diego Astronomy Association at the far end of the Kumeyaay Lake Campground's day-use parking lot to view the nighttime sky through telescopes. The next star party will be on Friday, February 3rd, starting at dusk. Rain or cloudy skies will cancel this event.
You can also join experienced Mission Trails Regional Parks tracking team members on Saturday, February 4th from 8:30 to 10:30 a.m. for an adventure in wildlife tracking on the Oak Grove Loop Trail. Learn the art of discovering and identifying tracks and other signs left behind by the park's wildlife. These easy walks are suitable for the whole family. Walks start from the front of the visitor center on the first Saturday of every month at 8:30 a.m. Don't forget to wear long pants for kneeling on the ground, wear sturdy closed-toed shoes, and bring along water. A hat and sunscreen are also recommended. Walks are canceled if raining.
Mission Trails Regional Park also hosts a birding basics class on Saturday, February 25th from 1 to 2:30 p.m. Participants will learn techniques to identify birds at a glance, as well as how to use a field guide. Classes meet at the Visitor Center in Classroom A on the last Saturday of every month. You can find information about star parties, Mission Trails Regional Park, tracking and birding basics classes at the Mission Trails Regional Park website, which is mtrp.org.
The Wildlife Research Institute presents Hawk Watch each Saturday in February at 10:30 a.m. at Beegent Ranch in Ramona. Arrive at 9:30 for coffee and donuts. Hawk Watch is an informative educational biologist's talk, plus questions and answer sessions with falconry experts and ambassador raptors for you to see up close and personal. The seated program lasts approximately 1.5 to 2 hours and is followed by an option for additional roadside observations of wild raptors and other wildlife, including a bald eagle nest, where you'll drive your own car fewer than 2 miles on paved roads. Biologists and local expert volunteer observers will help you spot and identify birds through high-powered professional telescopes. After the program, you can hike the Ramona Grassland Preserve hiking trail. It is recommended to bring binoculars and a folding chair if you have them, a jacket or other layered clothing, and sturdy shoes for uneven terrain. For more information, visit wildlife-research.org/hawkwatch.
That's it for this week. We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions across San Diego's East County.
See you around, East County.
Congressman Kevin McCarthy from Bakersfield announced in his first address as U.S. House Speaker that he wants to combat what he describes as woke indoctrination in the schools. But a new poll shows very few voters consider that to be an urgent priority. A survey commissioned by the American Federation of Teachers finds that improving students' academic achievement rates much higher. Pollster Guy Molyneux says the hot-button issues, like so-called critical race theory, may stir up the base, but they're low priority for the majority of voters.
Banning CRT, giving parents the right to decide what children learn, prosecuting teachers as child abusers if they teach CRT, allowing parents to have books they consider offensive removed from school libraries. Just one voter in 10 thought that was a priority at all.
The survey reveals that voters and parents' second highest rated priority is to help students navigate life challenges. California Governor Gavin Newsom's new budget proposal held the line on education funding despite a projected budget deficit. The California Federation of Teachers, in a statement, said its key priorities will be addressing staffing shortages and lowering class sizes. Randy Weingarten, president of the American Federation of Teachers, says the culture wars are part of a divisive political strategy that doesn't resonate with voters.
Voters overwhelmingly say, get back to basics, invest in public schools, deal with the teacher and the nurse and the guidance counselor shortages, get educators the resources they need to create safe and welcoming environments.
U.S. House Speaker McCarthy has signaled he will call for major spending cuts rather than raise the debt ceiling in the coming weeks. He hasn't specified whether those proposed cuts will target education. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
County Animal Services officers have rescued an 11-year-old dog from an oil-filled mechanics well inside a private garage in Ramona. The owner of the shop called the County Department of Animal Services on January 17th to report that the dog was trapped. When the officers arrived, they found Mia, a Siberian Husky mix, about 10 feet underground in the hole trying to escape the oil. Mia had been down there for more than a day, was weighed down by the oil and exhausted. Lieutenant Talia Padilla, along with officers Alyssa Moreno and Michael Moore, safely lifted Mia out of the well using tools and critical thinking skills. Mia was taken to the Bonita shelter, where Padilla and the medical team worked to clean the oil from her and begin medical treatment. The animal services team scanned Mia and found a microchip, which allowed them to reach her family. The owner said Mia had been missing for several days. They quickly came to retrieve Mia and bring her safely home. With more care from the owner's veterinarian, Mia is expected to make a full recovery. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Goetz.
You're listening to the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for our region.
Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. And today we're going to be talking about a very important traffic, human trafficking or sex trafficking in our region, how you could protect children from being exploited, and how to get help for those who have been trafficked. My very special guest today is Kathy Torres with Freedom from Exploitation, an organization that helps survivors of trafficking. Kathy is a survivor of sex trafficking herself, and she's also been active in many other organizations dedicated to helping survivors and end trafficking in our region. Kathy, welcome to the show, and I'll just say thank you for everything that you were doing to help these young women and boys.
Good morning. Thank you. I'm very honored to be here with you.
Great. Well, I met you at a showing recently in the Lakeside School District of Stolen. That's a film, for those not familiar, that's based on the award-winning investigative series by NBC7 San Diego TV on human trafficking in our region. The film was produced by J.W. August. Shout out to J.W., who's also done some freelancing for us. Great guy. And the viewing included a panel discussion led by NBC reporter Monica Dean, and you were one of the folks, you know, featured in this event. San Diego, disturbingly, is one of the national hubs for human trafficking. And Monica Dean said that their investigation listeners found evidence of this happening in every single school district in our county. So, Kathy, can you tell us, how did you first get involved in helping survivors of human trafficking?
Well, being a survivor myself, I had been a part of San Diego's Prostitution Impact Panel, which is a panel that sees men who have been arrested or cited for trying to pick up a prostitute. And they have community members, they have peer advocates or people that have gotten out of the life. They have men who have gotten out of the life from their sex addiction. They have service workers, people who LCSWs and MSWs and social work, people that help women and girls that have gone through this. They have law enforcement. And then they talk about relationships at the end, or have a thing about their when you're with one person, you're going to be with everybody else. So it's a health component.
Yeah.
I was doing that. I've been part of that since 2000. 1, mm-hmm. I believe. And from that, I realized I needed to do outreach to the women and girls that have been affected by this.
Right.
So I started going to different recovery homes and talking to women about an addiction beyond drugs and beyond alcohol. The travel, the glitz, the glamour, the clothes, the jewelry, the excess money, the, all this stuff. And that is the lure that gets people.
I was going to ask you, I mean, if you don't mind sharing, how did you first, you know, become exploited? And how does your own experience, you know, compare with what the young people today are going through?
Well, God rest their soul. My mother and father are in heaven. But my mother was relatively abusive when I was growing up.
I'm sorry. Okay?
You know, we figure she probably had some mental health issues. And
people who are abusers have been abused themselves at some time. So
exactly. And then I had an older teenager sexually abuse me when I was 5. Mm. Coupled with the verbal and physical abuse that I grew up with, I started using drugs when I was like 12, 13 years old. You get abused and you want to stuff it. Yeah. Today, kids run away. Back then, I was too afraid of my mother to run away. She would have killed me if I tried it. And then my sister got pregnant at a young age, had a baby at 15. All this compounded with the abuse inside the home, creating low self-esteem, self-doubt, all these different things, coupled with the addiction factor. By the time I was 18 and graduated high school, I was hooked on heroin and cocaine.
Oh, no.
Injecting it. And I had a 25-year drug and alcohol addiction.
Wow.
So is
that how some pimp somewhere lured you into going the next step?
Yes, exactly. I decided to get away from that when I was 18. And went into the military. Okay, I went into the Marine Corps.
Mm-hmm.
My father was a Marine, and I had, you know, anyway. When you go from one addiction, you skip over to another. I quit drugs and shooting up and stuff like that and became a really good alcoholic. That's what you do in the military. Yeah, and I went to boot camp at Parris Island, South Carolina, and got stationed out here. Well, I got married while I was in the military. After I got out and been married about 10 years, I had my son. And when I got out of the military, I continued my drug abuse because I didn't have a program. I didn't have a program that would help me to learn how to live life on life's terms. So my drug abuse destroyed my marriage. My husband had been smoking cocaine. God rest his soul. He's in heaven too. He died at 37 from cardiomyopathy that was exacerbated by the use of crack cocaine smoking. So he had his first 2 heart attacks due to cocaine, went into the hospital. While he was there, I was acting out myself with a 3-year-old son. And I can tell you right now, as an addict, I was a horrible mother. Horrible, horrible. I did not take care of my son correctly. And when my husband got out of the hospital, he saw what was going on. He took my son, and I didn't see my son from the age of 3.5 to almost 7.
Oh my.
2 weeks after that, I got fired from my job. I had worked 9.5 years for a doctor, which is not a good thing for an addict to do.
Yeah. So you were feeling desperate, I would imagine. And
yes,
I could hit bottom.
Yes. And then 2 weeks after that, I got evicted from my house.
Oh, no.
So in a month and a half, I lost everything.
So and for you, it was a financial desperation situation that drove you into trafficking. You weren't a teenager like so many of the kids now.
The first time I tried it, though, I was 18 and wanting a fix.
Wow.
That was it. And I was very promiscuous because of the abuse factor that happened to me early in my life.
Now, very good. The kids today, I mean, it seems to be happening younger and younger and younger. They said at the program, NBC did, that the average age that kids are lured into trafficking here is 16. And that's, very often it's much erroneous. Younger.
That's erroneous because they did a grant from USD to Point Loma Nazarene, and they utilized 702 of my data points. Every person that I've ever seen in any group, I de-identified and I did research on them. Mm-hmm. Because after I got out of all this stuff, I worked for SDSU Research Foundation for 20 years about at-risk women and their kids, which was basically me and my son. Mm-hmm. And that was the average age of when I saw them.
I see. So they might have been doing this for years before that.
I saw kids that were told me when they were like 9 and 10 years old, they were at the mall and these older teenagers approached them and say, hey, we're going to party tonight. You want to come smoke some weed? Do you want to come drink some beer? And they thought, oh, these older teenagers are paying attention to us. So, of course, they snuck out that night. They went and there were 7 guys there. Mm-hmm. That all brutally raped them, kidnapped them, and trafficked them. Oof. From the age of 9 and 10.
Terrifying. And now we're hearing that a lot of the luring is being done, well, in a couple of ways. One of the big things that's changed since years ago is the internet and how they're being lured in, you know, through game people they meet on gaming programs, on chat rooms, on Instagram, on Snapchat,
Facebook.
By these sort of predator. They may act like they want to be their, you know, their boyfriend, and let's meet up and buy them jewelry and clothing and all that. And the other thing that I thought was really scary was it isn't just stranger danger anymore, although that's obviously a factor, mm-hmm. but a lot of them are lured either by people they know, like a relative, but even, I think even more surprising for many of us is that these pimps or traffickers will get, you know, maybe middle school girls lured into this and have the middle school girls or boys go out and recruit their friends. So it's middle schoolers recruiting other middle schoolers.
Absolutely. Absolutely. He wants more money makers out there. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He wants more money makers out there. And according to that study that was by Point Loma Nazarene and USD, in the county of San Diego, there's $810 million every year of human trafficking. And the main one, of course, is drugs. But mm-hmm. once you sell a drug, it's done, it's gone. You can't use it anymore. And then there's guns. And once you've sold it and it's been used or dumped or whatever, it's gone. But a human being, you can sell over and over and over again. And the average sex buyer wants them younger and younger and younger, because then they think creeps. That there's no disease process.
Wow.
And there is.
Well, sure. They've been with more than one person and there's a, you know, yes. disease potential. In the film, we learned that although the penalties on pimps, it seems like have gotten harsher, perhaps, the Johns, the buyers of these sex acts, even knowing they're buying minors, are getting off with a slap on the wrist or nothing at all. The film depicted a man in his 70s who was mm-hmm. openly buying sexual services of young girls, pretty mm-hmm. obviously minors. And mm-hmm. these girls were recruited, I mean, this blew me away, by a pimp who was calling them up from prison, from jail, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. telling them to go, you know, have sex with this old man. And yet the buyer, the sex buyer, the old guy, was given complete immunity from prosecution by Bonnie DeMonis when she was the DA.
And that's one of the worst things you can possibly do. I've also been part of an organization that was called Demand Abolition. And it's where you follow the money. If the money wasn't out there, if these men weren't paying absurd amounts of money to have sex with these young girls or boys, mm-hmm. they wouldn't be out there.
Call it the oldest profession. I mean, unfortunately, it's been around forever. How do you completely diminish, but how do you really make a serious dent in abolishing it?
Well, first of all, penalties. It's not the oldest profession. It's the oldest oppression.
Okay.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And people want to legalize it and have it go on just just the way, you know, it always has.
Now, you're opposed to making it to a new law that makes it essentially a victimless, not a crime for the person who's being trafficked, but only for the traffickers, which, I mean, sounds like a good idea. Let's encourage these girls to come forward. But you've told us about some problems.
The trafficker and the Johns should be prosecuted.
Absolutely. Have we seen any improvement in that, by the way, under the new DA, under Summer Steffen?
Yes. Yes. Good. I just absolutely love Summer. She helped and brought to us the Ugly Truth campaign that, and they had billboards, you know, that if you think that you're paying this girl's bills and that you're helping her to have a good life and you're feeding her kids and stuff, it's a lie because there's a pimp behind her taking her money. You know, if you think this young girl really wants to have sex with you and she's enjoying it, that's a lie.
Yeah,
because psychologically, it's horrible.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And you've also said that since this law took effect, where they don't prosecute the victims, the women and girls and boys involved in this, that they're not coming forward to get help, that law enforcement isn't sending you referrals. So it's kind of a huge problem.
It is. For many, many years, I am still part of the prostitution impact panel that tries to engage men to educate them about what's really going on.
Yeah, that's interesting. Is that really very effective in dissuading them from going out and continuing to do this? To buy people for sex?
Yes. Yes, it is. It's just that they need to do broader sweeps and get more guys, because a lot of times if the cop will stop somebody who has been in the act or whatever, they slap the guy on the wrist and they arrest the girl.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's just, and they used to arrest minors. That was really sad. You know,
because they're obviously a minor has been victimized. She or he clearly didn't choose this path, you know.
Exactly. And if
or didn't
under
have the
18,
mental capacity, you know, or the, I mean, that's not a decision a minor should be making.
No. If you're under 18, you cannot give consent, period.
It's stat rape. I mean, even if it's a boyfriend, it's statutory rape. It's technically a crime anytime a minor has sex with somebody. So how they the person who's buying sex from a minor is just unfathomable.
Well, they've enhanced the fines. If a man picks up a girl that is underage and he knows that she's underage, that it will trigger larger fines, like an extra $25,000 or this or that. I'm not quite sure what the amounts are, but because they are, and through my Survivors of the Streets meeting that I had every week for years and years and years and years, where the courts would refer women that were picked up. They don't want to prosecute them. They refer them to my class. They do all the classes. Mm-hmm. They pay their fines. And then instead of prostitution on their record, it would be disturbing the peace. And then after a while, they would just drop the charges because they satisfied everything that the courts needed.
Yeah.
Well, because of this new law, SB 357, that says that the police cannot stop, cite, or arrest anybody for loitering with the intent to commit prostitution. And this includes the men that are driving around trying to pick up prostitutes. They can't stop them.
Oh my goodness.
And when they don't cite them and they don't go to court, they don't get referred.
So how, is there any other way? I know you've said you don't do street outreach because it's too dangerous. So how else can we reach these people short of getting that law repealed?
Well, I was going prior to COVID, I was going out to Las Colinas and I was teaming up with North County Lifeline and we would go out there and we would teach my curriculum. Well, it's not my curriculum, but that we would teach a curriculum called Ending the Game. And it was written by human trafficking survivors for human trafficking survivors. Mm-hmm. And it's 10 lessons long and it's very effective, even for those that are involved in a domestic issues. You know, maybe their husband, their boyfriend, their father, their mother are selling them. And I used to go to juvenile hall and I talked to kids there from 2003 to 2015. We went for 2 or 3 years out to Las Colinas pre-COVID. COVID just messed everything up.
Yeah.
And I would go out to different recovery homes. I had my groups. It was like, and I've seen over 3,000 people when you put it all together. And I don't know how many have told me that their first pimp was their mother.
Oh, my God.
Or their father. Their Shocking. Father would tell a young girl, why are you giving it up for free when you could be paid for it?
Terrible.
It is.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about the warning signs for parents, teachers. And I will say at the event the other night, there was a lot of interest from teachers and from school board members. There were school board members there from Lakeside. There was Gary Woods, Dr. Gary Woods from Grossmont Union High School District said he wants to make the district a leader in stopping human trafficking. So there are some signs that can be tips that someone is being groomed, a teenager is being groomed for possible trafficking, or perhaps already being trafficked. Can we go through what those signs are that parents and teachers or anybody else can look for?
Yeah. Well, teachers know their kids. They know if the kids don't have, you know, a lot of money, the family doesn't have a lot of money, then suddenly they start showing up with nice clothes. Or a cell phone, or 2 cell phones, and they might be missing some school. They might be coming in really, really tired because the boyfriend had them out late last night working.
Yeah.
You know, when a child has multiple cell phones,
there's pretty good tip off, yeah.
Yes. When suddenly you know the family doesn't have any money and this kid's got some nice clothes.
Mm-hmm.
When she's talking about her boyfriend, you know, and all the, he's got the cars, he's got the money. He's, yeah. Oh yeah, we're going to go out to Las Vegas next weekend. Oh,
or if she's secretive about texting and suddenly doesn't want people to see or trying to sneak up in the room to do the gaming, you know, I mean, one thing is don't let these young kids use the computer off by themselves. I've heard have it be in the, if they're on the internet, they better be on the room with the parent where the parent can kind of monitor what's going on.
Exactly. Exactly. But mm-hmm. I was talking primarily about the signs that teachers might be.
Right.
To see,
right.
You know, or school nurses, if they come in and these kids have got an STD.
Yeah. Hello.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so, and parents, yeah, if your kid has suddenly got something new and they can't tell you where it came from, or they don't have a receipt. Uh-huh.
Yeah, exactly. They've
got cell phones that the parents didn't buy. They've got iPads. They've got these different things. Check the apps. You have a right to go into your child's internet services and find out what kind of apps yeah. they've got on there.
Well, and checking the social media, I know even... I've been a news editor for a long time. And when I first started with this, I can recall, you know, missing teen cases where the police were just treating it like a routine runaway. And I remember having a discussion with a detective. Did you look at her mm-hmm. Facebook page? What's Facebook? You got to be kidding me. And on the Facebook, it was pretty obvious. She was, mm-hmm. you know, posing with almost no clothes on, laying on a bed with a bong. And I mean, there were no like friend posts. This was all someone who obviously was being trafficked. And they thanked me because they didn't know about it. I know they're more savvy now, and that's probably yeah. one of the first things that they check. But
we
it's
have
just sad that no
police.
One was checking that sooner.
We have trained the police. We have trained the sheriff's department, the FBI, gang units, emergency room doctors, teachers, schools, wherever it is. We've tried to go in there and educate them about what's going on. The FBI has got a clear view as to what's going on because you have what is termed the dark net. And yeah. the dark net is, there is nothing good on the dark net.
No, there's not. And they have done, I will say, you know, shout out for the FBI. They have done some national sting operations and arrested a whole bunch of people. And a lot of them mm-hmm. were right here in San Diego County. And the other thing we should mm-hmm. say is, although we've been talking about, you know, poor kids and abused kids, that's not all. Those aren't the only ones. I mean, it's happening. There have been kids taken off the streets in shopping malls in La Jolla. I knew a businesswoman who ran for city council, very reputable woman in Lemon Grove, and her teen daughter was abducted at gunpoint from a party she went to with people she thought she could trust and was forced into trafficking, you know. So it really can happen to anybody. You know, you got to know where your kids are going, know who they're with. You know, if they're going to a party at a hotel room, I mean, no way, you know. But I mean,
if they're staying the night at a friend's house, you call that friend's parents.
Yep.
And you find out on this date, are you going to be at the home? Who's going to be chaperoning? And you have to do that.
Yeah. One of the things that I have been shouting about for years, and it just doesn't seem to change, but when a teenager goes missing, all too often, the law enforcement authorities do not put out a missing person report. They don't tell the media for, you know, for days, sometimes even weeks go by. And to me, it seems like anytime a teenager is missing, you know, more than overnight, at least, you know, it seems like there should be a all points bulletin out, because even if they're a runaway, we know what happens. These runaways get trafficked. What's the statistic about the percentage of them that get approached by traffickers within like 24 or 48 hours of going missing? It's really astoundingly high.
It is. It is. Because on any given night, there's a good 2,500 runaway kids. And what they're failing to do is, if they're running away, what are they running away from?
Well, maybe that's it. If they're being abused at home, is there a thought maybe that, well, maybe they're, you know, going to wind up somewhere better, but
they just say they're a runaway, and they fail to put out a lot of notices for kids of color.
Yes.
If they're Black or Brown or Native American or any of that, they don't put the same energy into the investigation as they would.
And yeah, it's very racist, or at least unconscious bias. But you're right, a pretty white blonde girl from a good family in a good neighborhood, they're going to get that notice out a whole lot faster than if it's a Black or Hispanic girl from the hood, you know,
exactly.
Especially if the kid has had a history of maybe running away before or had a run in with the law before. They just dismiss it, and they don't realize that, you know, just because somebody ran away doesn't mean they're not being trafficked now. You know?
Exactly. And what are they running away from? If they're running away from poverty, and this guy comes up and sees them by themselves at a park, and they start talking to them, and they say, well, you don't have to put up with that stuff at your house. You don't have to put up with those foster parents. You don't have to put up. I'll take care of you, honey. It's okay.
Well, and if they are in trouble, if something illegal is going on in that house and they're running from that, let's say they're being physically abused or sexually abused at home, they should still try to find them. But then before they take them home, maybe do some heavy duty questioning, saying, you know, if there's problems at home, we'll help you. You don't have to go back to a dangerous situation, but running away isn't the answer. You could wind up somewhere worse, even worse, you know.
And they run away from the rules at their home, and then they run into this pimp who gives them even more rules. And so they don't understand. They're jumping out of the pot into the fire.
Yeah. What would you say to a teen who, let me back up a little bit. One of the ways they sometimes get these kids into this and hold them there is, you know, they'll convince them to text, say, a nude photo or semi-nude photo of themselves. I'll send one to you if you send one to me. I love you, you know, this kind of stuff. And the minute they do it, that's, I'm going to show it to everybody. I'm going to show it to your parents, your teachers, unless you do this one time for me, you know, so we can get some money, honey. And bingo, they've been hooked into prostitution. They're ashamed to go back. And then maybe the next thing, like you say, they're taken to a hotel and they're gang raped by 10 guys when they think and they're going to meet one. Or to meet the boyfriend even. So what would you say to a woman or a girl or a boy who's in that situation, who may be feeling, you know, too ashamed or too afraid to seek help?
To do it anyway, just to reach out. There are lots and lots and lots of people and organizations here in San Diego County that can help you. They can help you. They can put you in a safe place. They can help you.
And
don't take any skin pictures. Don't take, you know, don't take pictures when you don't have clothes on. Just don't, because once it's out there on the internet, it's out there and there's nothing you can do.
Exactly.
I've seen kids who took pictures of their breasts and send it to their boyfriend, and then lay it on the bed and send it to their boyfriend. And then they break up with that boyfriend. And the boyfriend says, you know, if you don't do this for me, or you go out with my friend, then I'm going to send this to your grandparents. I'm going to send it to the school. I'm going to do this or that.
Yeah. And I'm going to publish it online so everybody can see it. Yeah, exactly.
And if you take pictures even of yourself, that's called child pornography. And it's against the law.
Yeah, a lot of teens don't realize they're actually breaking the law if they do that. But I imagine that's another thing these guys could hold over them. Oh, you know, you're a criminal now. Mm-hmm. So just don't, you know, don't do it. That said, I mean, if someone was lured into trafficking and they're, you know, 14 or something, are the police really going to prosecute that girl for sending the picture of her breasts? I mean, is that really a real fear that she should worry about if she's trying to get out of prostitution?
They could threaten that, but there's a lot of programs out there that will help her with that and try to get it off the internet. It's, I mean, if you send it through the internet and he or to his phone and he puts it out there, there's like,
really, but she's really not likely to wind up in jail if she's going and telling them about being pimped out, you know.
Exactly. They'll help her.
Okay, good.
They will help her. They no longer arrest her for this stuff.
Okay, good.
They help her.
Good. I know you talked about what got you to finally escape, to get out of trafficking, and what happened to the other young women that were being trafficked at the same time, the women you knew who were in this life?
There's not a lot of them are still alive. The majority of the people, women that I knew out there, are either in prison or dead. Most of them are dead because of the things that went on out there. Of course, I've been out of the life for 29 years. And at one point there was a guy down here killing prostitutes.
Yeah.
And he killed up to 45 women. And I knew a lot of them. I knew a lot of them.
This was really dangerous. Plus drug overdosing with fentanyl is another issue now. There's just so many ways that it can end badly.
If you go to a hotel or if you get in a car or you go to somebody's house, you don't know who else is there and you don't know what they're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
You're in their world. So when they talk about you can be empowered because you're getting their money and you're this. No, men are bigger, stronger. They have more force. And try taking a weapon and you'll have that weapon taken from you and used against you.
Yeah.
So if you don't understand.
I understand that there's been an effort to get, you know, an education campaign going with posters all over the place. Now it's in, you know, airports and hotels and bathrooms and, you know, train stations and schools could put it up in school bathrooms. I mean, anybody really could. And it has information about, you know, how to get help. So if somebody listening out here is a survivor or suspects that somebody they know needs this kind of help, who can they call?
The National Human Trafficking Hotline is 1-888-3737-888.
Is that the same as the Be Free? I think there's a 1-800-BE-FREE or one.
Well, there's a 1-800-BE-FREE, but the national hotline is 1-888-3737-88.
Okay. And if you missed that, we're going to have an article on this at eastcountymagazine.org or just Google, you know, National Sex Trafficking or National Human Trafficking Hotline.
Yes.
And you'll find it. But do call. There is help out there for anybody who wants to get out of this and you know, rebuild their life. There's hope at the end of the line. Kathy,
God allows U-turns. That's the thing I've always said in my life. God allows U-turns.
There you go. Allows U-turns. I like that. What else would you like our audience to know, Kathy, about this very important issue of human trafficking, primarily sex trafficking in our region?
Stop blaming the victims. It's the men that go out there and buy these children, these boys, and ask them to do vile things with their little bodies. And then you turn around and you blame the victim. Well, she's just nothing but a little hoe. She's just nothing but a little prostitute. How about the men that buy them? Those are the perpetrators.
I agree with you completely, Kathy. Well, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to join us today on the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
Thank you.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. You can support independent public media for our region by making a donation or a sustaining monthly pledge of any amount at www.knsj.org. We're your community radio station, KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso, serving the San Diego border region from the mountains to the sea. That's www.knsj.org.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is John Tidwell with East County Magazine's Green Scene Report. A large tract of scenic wildlife habitat in East County has been saved from development. The San Diego River Park Foundation announced that it has acquired the 80-acre site known as Lillian Hill near Three Sisters Falls, one of our region's most popular hiking destinations. Located between Descanso and Pine Hills, the site has sweeping 360-degree views overlooking Boulder Creek, the headwaters of the San Diego River, as well as Eagle Peak. It also serves as a natural wildlife corridor for bighorn sheep, mountain lions, and other species. In addition, the land includes the only section of Sheep Camp Creek that was flowing through private land, land that will now be preserved for posterity thanks to the San Diego River Park Foundation. Rob Hutzel, president and CEO of the foundation, says, "The purchase of the property will ensure that the creek will remain wild, forever available for the wildlife that depends upon it, as well as protecting the health of water that flows in it before it reaches Boulder Creek and the San Diego River." Donors raised over $420,000, and Backcountry Land Trust secured $100,000 in financing to help the San Diego River Park Foundation complete the purchase. The property had been up for sale, marketed as having potential for up to 5 houses to be built in its 8 separate parcels. "By purchasing it, we prevent this from happening," Hutzel said in an email to supporters. "We can begin to clean up the property, heal it from decades of use, and create a place where wildlife can roam forever. The property will be transformed into open space for wildlife, trees, native grasslands, and other vegetation." Hutzel adds, "We will explore maintaining well-placed recreation trails which protect wildlife and help heal the land while creating opportunities for people to connect with nature. If you would like to volunteer or donate to help the San Diego River Park Foundation in the post-acquisition efforts to restore Lillian Hill, you can visit sandiegoriver.org.
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, A.K. Jewel, Royalty Free Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine Radio Show or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show.